Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Add Jeff Fisher to the names that will be in attendance on Sunday for Titans Colts. He's there in honor of Eddie George and Steve McNair. And if you have not gone to listen to the OTP this week with Mike Keith and Amy Wells and Jeff Fisher, it is a must listen. Must listen. I haven't seen the link circulated too much. I would go to TitansOnline.com and find it. Click on it and listen to it. It's that good.
Yeah, we were talking about
it last night. I retweeted it a couple days ago. I'll do that again.
We were talking about it last night while we were hanging out, waiting to talk to Ray Lewis, who will send out a podcast link shortly. And
like of all the great coverage,
Mike Keith, we're talking
of all the great coverage that they've done this week. That is my favorite piece of audio or video content that they have out there, because they go down memory lane and Jeff starts telling stories that you're like, oh yeah, I forgot about that for an hour and a half. It's great.
Yeah, my understanding is Jeff had an obligation out of town and is busting it to get back overnight Saturday to be here on Sunday.
John McClain with us. He's presented by FreelandChevy.com. Before we preview week two and welcome your phone calls at 615-737-1045, John, let's start with Sunday's festivities here in Nashville, where at halftime they'll retire the numbers of Eddie George and Steve McNair. Give us your favorite Eddie George moment or story from behind the scenes over the years.
The first game Eddie played his first season here, when he came out of Ohio State and Eddie won the Heisman Trophy, there was a lot of talk before the draft that he'd gotten fat on the banquet circuit and that he had a shoulder problem that could require surgery, so his stock started to drop. And that was before social media. But, of course, Eddie denied it. His agent, Lamont Smith, denied it. And I had the Oilers in my mock draft taking Eddie because I knew how much Floyd Reese liked him. And I was pretty confident in the pick. And Chris Myers, the Fox broadcaster, worked for ESPN at the time. And he used to call me before the draft. He'd call around asking people, and he asked me what I thought. And I said, well, I haven't taken Eddie George with their first-round pick. He goes, okay, well, you're usually spot on, because I'd told him McNair the year before because we knew they were going to take Steve. And so during the draft, Floyd is about to take him. He trades down. And I'll never forget being in the media room. Dave Pearson was the PR guy then who came to Nashville, too. Now he's with the Seahawks. And I jumped up, started calling Floyd every name in the book because he traded down. He wasn't going to get Eddie George. He was going to go to New Orleans. And then Floyd traded back up one spot behind him. And I thought, sure, New Orleans is going to take Eddie. And the coach, Jim Moore, at that time said later, one of the biggest mistakes he'd ever made as a head coach was not taking Eddie George in 1996. He took a corner, Alex Molden, from Oregon, and Floyd got Eddie anyway. So I took back all those nasty things I said about Floyd. And the thing that stood out about Eddie's performance to me was he was such a big running back, a straight-up running back who took so much punishment. And when Jeff Fisher was the head coach, of course, Jeff wanted to run the football. I mean, he just did. And so Eddie would face a lot of eight-man fronts. And I remember the coaches would tell me that Jeff didn't call the plays, but he'd say, okay, run it, run it. And they're like, but it's an eight-man front. Run it anyway. Because he knew Eddie more often than not was going to get the yards necessary. But he took a beating. He didn't miss time. You know, the thing that epitomized him more than anything was running over Ray Lewis with wearing a sling because of his shoulder. And I just always respected so much. And I wish that there's a way that Eddie at some point, Paul and I could help Eddie get into the final 15 finalists for the Hall of Fame, because he had over 10,000 yards, and the way he had to get it against so many eight-man fronts, if we got statistics, which you could compare what he ran against to what others ran against, I think a lot of the voters would be impressed. And I can't remember. I got to tell this story fast because it takes a long time. But Eddie, right before Eddie signed, his agent was Lamont Smith, who had held out Jerome Bettis and Barry Sanders. So I used to write, "Hold him out, Lamont Smith." And that's all I ever called him, "Hold him out, Lamont Smith," because I thought Eddie was going to hold out too. So I remember right before training camp in San Antonio, I was playing golf. I was driving back. I get a call from a 303 area code. Don't know who it is. I answer. And he goes, "This is John McClain." I said, "It is." He said, "This is Hold him out, Lamont Smith. And I want you to be the first to know we've agreed on a contract with Eddie George and Bleep You." And right about that time, a cop pulled me over because I was speeding, and I told Holdemout I'd call him right back. Cop says, "What's your hurry?" I said, "Well, I work for the Chronicle. Eddie George, number one draft choice, just agreed to a contract." That was his agent telling me, and I got a chance to get a scoop, and he let me go. And then I thought that was just, I don't even know if I ever told Eddie that story, but Eddie George is one of my all-time favorite players in my 43 years covering the NFL.
John McClain with us. John, you would have been proud last night. You would have really enjoyed the event that Paul and I had the chance to attend. It was cigars, cocktails, and conversations with Eddie George and Ray Lewis. Off the record, 100 people only in the room. It was last night at Arrington Vineyards just outside of Nashville, and it was tremendous. It reminded me of the old Charles Davis dinners.
Did Eddie get to say anything?
Yeah, they did a good job.
Yeah, they did.
Those microphones and get up and preach like he did. Has Ray's Hall of Fame speech ended yet?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, it was nothing like that, which surprised us. I mean, Paul and I at one point looked at each other like, I can't believe how free-flowing and easy this conversation has been, because Ray didn't hog the mic by any means.
And we had him for 15 minutes that we recorded, that we played on the show earlier today, and he was much more conversational and less preachy than we maybe anticipated.
You must have taken some tranquilizers. Eddie told me they may do that in Houston. I told him, I said, "Well, if you guys do expect a big crowd, anything I can do to promote it, I will." And I think it's great, those two, considering the rivalry they had, now have a friendship, and they're raising money for charity, and I think that's just tremendous.
Well, the one item that I know they're not going to mind us mentioning is the way it was back in the AFC Central days, where you could expect 45 to 50 carries per offense. And the battle was not just one play per series. It was literally every single play. Ray Lewis was tracking down Eddie George, or vice versa, peeking over the shoulder pads to see where the other one was, and if there was any sign of them slowing down.
Looking for a hand down.
I loved that storytelling and that era of football, because the final scores of those games were 13-10, 12-9, very low scoring, and it really came down to that individual matchup.
I think that the fact that Eddie was able to stay healthy, I haven't covered many games in which a defense played as well as they did in that loss that was basically blown by the special teams and Al Del Greco to Baltimore. That was a tough one to stomach because the defense was fantastic and Eddie had taken such a beating. And then winning the playoff game in Baltimore, in which Eddie had, was it shoulder separation? Is that what he had?
He
played in the second
half
in a sling.
Yeah.
And watching him run over Ray Lewis and winning that game was, I think, one of the best victories this franchise has ever had. And I've always respected Eddie, not just the kind of player he was, how tough he was. And you guys used to see him, how he would stay after practice no matter how hot it was. And he was working extra. And I remember when we did the leukemia and lymphoma charity event in off season, and Eddie was late, and so you wanted to get him. You had that thing set up to
the Heisman helmet,
and I'm calling him And he said he's stuck in the rain. He's on his way. And I think he probably was standing outside, under a overhang, of course, waiting till the last possible instant. Because when he came in there, right as you were about to do it, and the fans started chanting, Eddie, Eddie, I told him he was a ham. And I thought Eddie done a tremendous job as an actor. I've seen him on different TV shows. And I told him last time I talked to him, I hope he did more of that because it's always fun to see him.
That helmet brought over $4,000 that night.
And you know who bought that helmet that night?
Jim Caden.
Jim Caden, our good buddy Jim Caden did.
John, we'll preview week two in just a moment, get some of your picks for the games. But from Eddie George to Steve McNair, what comes to mind from some of your favorite stories you've heard over the years?
When they came to Houston as rookies, their personalities were so different. You know, Eddie from Philadelphia and the Ohio State University Heisman Trophy winner, been making speeches all over the country, big booming personality. And Steve, you know, small town Mississippi kid who was very quiet, reserved once he came to the Oilers. And they had Jerry Rome was the offensive coordinator, and he'd wanted Chris Chandler to be his quarterback. Jerry had Chris in Phoenix.
We just talked to Jerry earlier in the show, John.
Yeah, and he favored Jerry. Jerry will never admit this, but he did. He really favored Chris. Chris was an experienced veteran. I think he'd been in the league 8 years. He's also one of the most disliked players I've ever been around, disrespected too. Christine Chandler, as they call him, because he's always hurt, knew the medical terms of every medicine you could take. And at the time, I didn't realize it, but he didn't help. He didn't help Steve at all. You wonder about veteran quarterbacks mentoring younger guys. You think, well, they do it, but we saw with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, it doesn't happen. And Joe Flacco last year with Lamar Jackson, some guys just don't do it. Steve never complained about it one time. And so we all wondered, you know, because Steve was so quiet and he was playing a role of a rookie, he'd sign like a 7-year contract so they could keep him on the bench. But by his teammates, though, they wanted McNair to play. And they used to come by and talk to me all the time with, you got to write something, use anonymous quotes and all that. So I decided, and this is the last time I used anonymous quotes, except in a news story, and I quoted several players who had given me quotes how much they wanted Steve McNair to be the starter. And the next day, it created a huge controversy here. And Steve, of course, said all the right things. Chris Chandler said, I made it up. You know, I made it up since it didn't have names on it. And for the only time in NFL history I saw while Steve was staying in the background, Mark Stepanovsky, the center, admitted he was one of the ones. And I'll never forget, wow. Chris Chandler said, well, I guess you can still put your hands under a guy's butt even if he doesn't want you to play. And it was shortly after that, Steve got to play for the first time, and people could see how special he was. He ran a lot, ran over a lot of people, as he was still doing when he got to Nashville. And but at the time, he wasn't really Air McNair, except for Alcorn State. We didn't get to see that because he was still learning the NFL.
John McClain with us. You can join him, 615-737-1045, our number. John, let's get some of your picks. And let's start with Houston and Jacksonville. What do you think happens there?
I picked the spread's 8.5. I picked the Texans by 7. They played a great offensive game in New Orleans. They had 28 points. Watson, 3 touchdown passes, 1 rushing. They ran for 180 yards, 7.8 yards carry. They didn't get to the quarterback, and they didn't do a good job in coverage. They're going against a rookie quarterback, Gardner Minshew, just had one of the greatest debuts in history. And if they lose at home to Gardner Minshew, fans and media here are going to go crazy. They're going to want Bill O'Brien fired on the spot.
John McClain with us. Follow him on Twitter at McClain_on_NFL. The Dolphins are 18.5-point underdogs at home to New England. Would you take the points or give the points?
No, I I don't see Bill Belichick embarrassing his close friend Brian Flores. He knows what Flores is going through down there. I'm guessing we're going to see rookie quarterback Jarrett Stidham in the second half because the Patriots can basically name their score. Now, the Dolphins have been beating the Patriots. They beat them down there last year on that miraculous play at the end. So they're going to play hard against the Dolphins. They're not good. We all saw that. But I don't think that – I think Belichick will go out of his way not to run it up.
Packers at 1-0 hosting the 1-0 Vikings. Thought Minnesota looked good last week, and then I watched maybe a quarter and a half, looked at the box score. They only attempted 10 passes last week. They can't win doing that same thing this week, can they?
Well, they wouldn't have to do it. That's Gary Kubiak establishing run. Dalvin Cook played great. Kubiak likes to have a balance, and they're going to need to, I would think they'd need to throw the ball more than they would, than they will, but I'd never pick against the Packers at home. I'm going with Green Bay.
Steelers hosting the Seahawks.
Seattle barely beat Cincinnati by 1 point at home. Steelers were humiliated. I think Mike Tomlin, Ben Roethlisberger, that team's more talented than they showed against the Patriots. I think they'll bounce back and win.
How about the Rams and Saints? That should be a great game that's being played out in L.A.
You talk about a team motivated to win that game, it'd be the Saints, but I'm not picking against Sean McVay and the Rams at home. You know, the Saints barely had to win on a 58-yard field goal with no time left to win it all over the Texans, so I'm going with the Rams.
Well, and if not for the Saints, there's a chance of some bad football being played in that division. We saw two teams play last night, and then Atlanta, they could start 0-2 if they lose at home this week to Philadelphia, which will not be an easy game for Atlanta.
And I picked the Eagles to win because I thought the Falcons were terrible. And there's a lot of talk now about Dan Quinn's job's in jeopardy. And it's amazing when you got Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and a lot of talent they have that they look so bad. Maybe they'll bounce back, but I think the Eagles beat them.
Jets and Browns. Greg Williams against his former team that he was the interim head coach for.
I don't care if Sam Darnold was playing instead of Trevor Siemian. I'm still picking the Browns to bounce back. It would be kind of amusing if they started 0-2 after all the hype, but I'm going with the Browns.
Odell Beckham had a lot to say about Greg Williams.
Yeah, he did, and that's probably not smart because those guys want to curry favors with the coach. Maybe they go in there and hit him illegally and break his watch.
And our game, Titans and Colts, big AFC South matchup across the division this week. Who do you have, John, and why?
Revenge is sweet. After the way they ended last season, get beat at home by the Colts, they're going to get revenge against Jacoby Brissett, shut down Marlon Mack, who had the most rushing yards in a game for the Colts since Edger and James in 2004, and I think Titans start 2-0 and keep that lead in the division.
John, have a great football weekend. We will catch up with you next week to recap it all.
You guys have fun Sunday. I sure wish I was going to be there for the retirement. I'm glad Andy Adams is doing that because those two guys sure deserve it. Thank you very much.
It'll be really cool. Thank you, John. John McClain, presented by FreelandChevy.com.